All right, with Dan being in California this week, you guys are lucky enough to get a replacement host. We have Brady Preston here today. Brady, have you ever done a podcast before?
No, this is my first one.
A lot of you will know Brady. The team's large enough that I don't think everyone will, so I'm gonna give you guys an opportunity to get to know him here. Before we do that, we had the iCup this last Saturday, and then we have Vail Lake, which is still going on as we speak. So we will run over those next week. So if your kid had a really good result or whatever, like, we'll talk about it next week. I was going to run over all of it, but that's usually Dan's purview. So really, like, in lieu of team business, I just want to step in here. Brady, how do you usually introduce yourself to people? It's like my favorite thing to ask. Like, if you're being introduced to an acquaintance at a party, how do you like explain who you are and what your deal is?
Oh boy, how much time do we have?
We have an hour. Yeah, we've got...
I can usually talk for 3 hours just about myself.
Perfect.
And that's only when I'm age 16. So I am... I'm in my 40s. I'm a middle-aged man. Mm-hmm. Has to shave once every other day.
Okay.
I am an interior designer by trade. I've been doing that for, since I was 20 years old. I started working with my dad, who started a company in Park City in 84, and then just been working with him. I did graduate from the U of U, not in design, but in Spanish and business.
Really?
Yes, very, very helpful in the design world. So I essentially was an apprentice with my dad for many years, learning the trade and whatnot, and then just purchased the company. It's called Ontario Design Company in Park City. Shameful plug. Bought the company 3 years ago, and just have been working in Park City, and that's what I do by profession. But my hobbies obviously include biking and running and skiing, and I don't know, just really love being outside and doing things with my family, hiking and whatnot.
And you have, I know of Andrew Preston. Are there other Prestons that I haven't met?
Andrew is my oldest.
Okay.
And then Eliza Preston is also on the team.
Okay.
She is going to be a freshman this year.
Exciting.
Yes. And then I have, he's 11, William, who actually is also on the team.
Really?
No, he's in fifth grade.
Okay.
So
started
not, young. Yeah, he isn't in the Junior Devo program, but he loves his bike. He loves doing park stuff, which I generally stay away from, as those who ride with me know.
Yeah.
And then my youngest is James, who is 7, and he also loves biking until he falls, and he'll say it's the worst day of his life. But he quickly forgets and gets over it, and we move on.
7-year-olds are durable.
They are so extremely durable. I mean, it's funny to see what I can take him on and what he decides to complain about and how quickly he'll get over it. But I just figure we throw him to the fire and he gets burned from time to time, but always comes out with a smile. So
how did you guys land in cycling? Because this is, you mentioned before you started doing that, this is like a relatively new thing for you, which I didn't know.
Yes. Well, so I always have cycled. I mean, we were one of the few people at the very start that I remember my dad came home when I was, I think maybe 10 years old. He came out home with this white Trek. It was an Antelope, is what it was called. I think it was like an Antelope 100. I don't know. Anyway, you know, it was probably a steel frame and weighed maybe 37 pounds, but it was a mountain bike, which oddly enough looks more like a gravel bike these days.
Oh yeah. Do a whole episode about that.
Yeah,
it's a conspiracy for sure.
Yeah. So we had mountain bikes, and my first mountain bike was a Huffy. I didn't even know they made mountain bikes, but they did. So, you know, and we played around on the bikes, and we did that until in high school I picked up running. And so I did cross country and track. And I was a mediocre runner. It was fine. I enjoyed it. But my true passion was skiing. I was an avid alpine skier.
Living in Park City growing up?
Yeah, living in Park City. So we had, you know, $99 season pass every year.
Right.
Even if you made the honors roll, you got a free pass. So it was great. I mean, it was just like, you know, in the summer, all I would think about was snow and skiing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we do snow dances. We can get into that later. But, and then just any opportunity I had, I was at the resort. So that was definitely my passion in high school. But we also had a really cool PE elective class when I was a junior and senior. And it was two periods long, so 3 hours. So I'd go to school in the morning till like 11 o'clock. And then after that, we got off campus. We would mountain bike in the fall and spring. We'd climb. And in the winter, we would ski at the resort.
Really?
And we got credit for it.
What was this class called?
It was called PE Adventures. And it was awesome. Like the coach, the two coaches were patrollers at Park City Mountain Resort. And so I think they just came up with this idea. I don't know if they still do it, but we had it and we had such a blast. It was so fun. So everybody's at school and we were up on the mountain skiing. It was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is, so you're one of those people where like, I think I talked to a lot of people in Utah where even if you weren't in mountain biking, like in it, it was always this adjacent thing that maybe yes. complemented skiing or just was culturally big where you lived up in Park City.
Yeah, so like, definitely. Yeah.
Lots of cycling exposure.
Yes.
But when did we kind of go over to the, because I mean, it seems like cycling is maybe one of the main things in your life right now, right?
Oh, it's definitely it right now. And we're not quite there yet. So I'll just keep going through.
Okay.
So we, I served an LDS mission in Guatemala, came home, was at the U of U, still just kind of playing around, but mostly interested in the social aspect of life. I was in a fraternity at the U of U, met my wife, Heidi Preston, who is also a coach on the team. And that's what we love to do. I actually introduced her into mountain biking.
Really?
Yeah. And funny enough, I was, you know, when I was thinking, okay, I've got a bike for her. Where should I take her? What's a super Uh-oh. Easy trail?
Uh-oh.
So naturally, one thinks of Quarry Trail, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean,
notoriously super easy. And just yes. chill. Oh, like a lax super chill. Trail.
Yeah. Very, yeah, there's no, like, technical features whatsoever. So, yeah, I took her up that, and it was a train wreck.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
she was able to forget it very quickly, and I think I eventually took her up to some nicer trails in Park City, but Round Valley wasn't around back then yet. So I can't remember what we did after that, but she eventually just fell in love with it, and that's all she does now is she just loves mountain biking. So we had that together. And then I always wanted to be just do a race a year, whether it's just a 5K or a 10K or something, and that's how it was in my 20s. And then we had kids, and anyway, I wanted to try something more difficult. I have never been able to swim. Like, I would go into the pool. Part of our PE Adventures class, actually, we would go to the middle school up in Park City. They had a full indoor pool. We had kayaks, and we would kayak in the pool.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, just, like, totally random stuff. Yeah.
Man, so Park City was just a lawless wasteland back then. You'd get away with anything.
It was the Wild West.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, they would teach us how to roll without the paddle, and it was a blast. But the coaches would make fun of me because I could not swim across the pool. I mean, it was
mountain
just
boy,
pathetic.
Not an ocean boy.
Oh, no, yeah. not whatsoever, no. And I couldn't figure it out. Like, okay, I swear I'm strong.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I remember the swim coach happened to be there one time, and she just kind of looked at me as I came up, and she said, you know what? If you were in the ocean, you would die in, like, 2 minutes. Like, oh, gee, thanks for the
nurturing
confidence.
Educational,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
environment you were in.
She told her how it was. So anyway, naturally, as I going through and I wanted to try something, it's like, you know what? I don't know how to swim. I want to learn how to swim. I'm going to figure it out. So I signed up for a half Ironman. Like, let's just
wow.
go for it.
So that's a stretch, you know?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a stretch, but okay. I figure, you know, if anything, it would have to get me to figure out how to swim. So eventually I hit the pool and still couldn't make it across the pool. And then just one time it clicked and I was able to swim. And lo and behold, I found myself swimming a mile. I mean, it was just like night and day difference.
Okay.
It was weird. I'm not fast by any stretch. I mean, mm-hmm. it's pathetic how slow I am, but at
yeah,
least I can do it.
You can do it.
So I did the half Ironman and that was a really cool experience. And then doing that naturally led into, well, I guess I should try a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried a marathon. I did the Ogden Marathon. This was mm-hmm. like 12 years ago. and it was the worst experience of my life. Now, training up to it was fine, although I was being fed a lot of misinformation, bad information. And Joe, I know you enjoy going pretty hard every mm-hmm. time you're on the bike.
Yes, I've been known to not pace super well. I'm working on it.
Well, there we go.
Does that impulse exist in you as well?
Oh, very much. So
I say as if I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always thought that, you know, if I'm not going as hard as I can, what's the point?
Right. Yeah.
Like, and Strava was just coming out.
Oh yeah.
And it was okay. If I'm running the segment, if I'm not on the like trophy board, why am I doing this?
This is
like, I'm not even going to count it.
Right.
So yeah, everything was just like going hard and hard. And that was the same with the training for the marathon. Sure, I'd do longer runs, but I never did a quote unquote zone two, had no knowledge of it. And so it was just a mess training for it. And also like the knowledge that I had about nutrition and fueling during a race was absent entirely. I would drink before long runs a massive shake just full of protein and milk.
Perfect.
Right.
I always say that if you're going to do something aerobically strenuous, you should have a stomach full of dairy. Yeah. That's a prerequisite.
Yes. I guess I just wanted to attempt churning it into butter mm-hmm. while I was running.
Yeah.
Which it did, and just destroyed the inner lining of my gut.
Mm.
And I just kept doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, no information was out there. I feel like this was before the internet, but obviously it wasn't. Seems like it was.
That sounds like something an internet influencer would tell you to do now. I was like, you need to eat a pound of butter, because
yeah.
the media is lying to you. And
yeah,
then go
exactly.
run a marathon, and you know.
Well,
you were a pioneer of just bad ideas back then. If you could have recorded those, you could have a media empire now.
Absolutely.
Your TikTok following would be tremendous.
I learned so much from poor information and bad examples. It's amazing what you can learn. It's like, where was all the good influence? Anyway, that came. Anyway, had a horrible experience running the marathon. And then, I had new shoes on, too. Like, just barely breaking in new shoes. This is just crazy. I was so foolish.
You checked every box, like every classic mistake.
You did.
Sleep 2 hours
bad.
The night before, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. And anyway, it was a bad experience. I had these massive gaping blisters, not to be too into it, but by the end of the run, and anyway, I just swore I'm never going to do this again.
Right.
The following month, there was a Spartan race that I had heard about. And again, this was 10 years ago. This was kind of new. This is, you know, obstacle course racing.
See, a Spartan race, for those, I'm not super familiar, because I've seen the t-shirts.
Yes.
And I kind of had this vague idea, like, I know people running through the mud, maybe climbing up a wall. Like, what is Spartan race like a brand, or is it a specific type of event that's put on by different people, or like, what
yes.
is it?
Spartan race is a brand.
Okay.
It is a brand in the sport of obstacle course racing. It's called OCR.
Okay.
And there are other brands. So Spartan Race is the largest brand. And at the time, they were the biggest. The other one was called Tough Mudder.
Okay, I've seen that too.
And yeah. maybe you've heard of the Tough Mudders. They are the ones where they have electroshock therapy.
Wait.
So
Wait, hang on. How was I not? Because I've seen the t-shirts.
Yeah.
So electroshock therapy.
Yes. So what that
Which, like, the UN won't let you do to prisoners, right? Like, that's like
But people will pay to do it for themselves.
Tell me more. I am
so
engrossed in this.
What they have is, one of their obstacles is, it's essentially a 50-foot long section, tunnel, that you go through, and there's wires hanging down. And they don't, like, you don't know which wire is live or not, but there are live wires with open-ended. So if you hit a wire, you get zapped. And it's like, I don't know, if you've ever held a dog collar, those electric dog collars, and gone past, this is something we did in fourth grade.
Right, yeah.
You know, you hold on the
You were a curious child.
Happens. Yes.
Your friend didn't know.
Yeah.
You were a mean-spirited little boy. Maybe I'm extrapolating everyone here, but
no,
yeah.
We did it to ourselves. Okay. It was more of a dare kind of thing. So anyway, you get zapped and it doesn't feel good. I mean, you're not going to drop like you're getting tased or anything.
Yeah,
but actually,
it hurts.
People do black out. And so you do have to sign a waiver saying you may die and you can't hold us responsible.
Sure, yeah.
So
we have a version of that for Maybird.
Yes.
We don't electrocute people yet, but...
but we could.
Yeah.
It builds character.
Sure, okay.
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Well, so that's Tough Mudder. That didn't... I didn't really care about that because that, to me, doesn't show any athleticism. It just shows stupidity.
Yeah, there's toughness, but I say undirected toughness in and of itself. I don't know if you could stick your face on a hot iron for 5 minutes, is it kind of impressive? Like, sure, but...
Sure, yeah. That would be something to talk to people about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and so anyway, yeah, there's Tough Mudder, Spartan, there's like, I don't know, there were a few others at the time, but Spartan Race was definitely the biggest, and they've actually bought Tough Mudder.
Okay.
But it's still... their thing, and their ultimate goal is actually to make this an Olympic sport, and I think they're fairly close to. Yes.
Okay.
But 10 years ago, when I did my first race, it was up in Soldier Hollow. It was still very much kind of a fringe,
like an indie sort of.
Yeah.
These people are bored of. I assume mostly people like I'm bored of marathons and 5Ks.
Yes.
I want something a little more, and it's funny because the bicycle's been invented, and these people don't even know, right?
They're yes.
like, I like the aerobic, but I need.
Something
less,
else,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So what is involved, I think the owner, his name was Joe DeSena, he's still around, he lives in Vermont. The idea, he created this, and he was an Army guy, so he wanted to bring what they do in the military to just regular people.
Because we've all seen in the movies, crawling under the thing,
yeah,
jumping,
like
climbing
the
up, rope over
stuff.
The wall. Sure,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's essentially what a Spartan race is, except
okay.
there is a lot of running.
Okay.
There's various lengths of the race. There's a 5K, there's a 10K, there's a half marathon, and there's an ultra, which is a 30-mile race. And in the ultra is like there's 62 obstacles that you have to go through.
Wow.
There's rope climbs. There's 50 to 100-pound sandbag carries. You get to throw a spear.
Oh, okay.
Which is fun.
That is awesome.
And yeah, in... And, you know, like there's a massive tire. It's a 350-pound tire that you have to flip back and forth. So it really just targets everything. To train for a Spartan race, you've just got to target everything and practice in everything.
And you're sore everywhere after.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And if you don't make an obstacle or if you're unable to complete an obstacle, the penalty is 30 burpees and then you get to move on. So, you know, running a clean race is completing all the obstacles, even down to the spear throw.
Is that rare, or are people generally able to get all of them, or is that
most
like a big deal,
time,
like, oh my gosh, you got all of them?
No, most of the time, like in your first or second or third Spartan race, nobody ever does a clean race. And then by the time you're in number 10, for the most part you do, except for the spear throw is 50-50.
Okay.
You do it long enough, you practice long enough, the spear throw, you can dial it in. And
so you don't have to just throw it. You have to throw a spear with some level of accuracy or distance?
You have to stick it, yes.
Okay.
It's, I think, 25 yards away.
Okay.
And you have to throw it, and it has to stick. And if it doesn't stick in this object, which is, it used to be a person.
Okay.
So now they've taken that away, and it's just this black object with a circle. Anyway, yeah, if it sticks, great, you move on. If it doesn't, you have to do 30 burpees.
Okay.
So, and they usually put that at the end of the race, just before the final sprint. And a lot of races are won and lost at the spear throw. And it's either this massive adrenaline boost if you make it, or just,
right.
Oh, great, I've lost 2 to 3 places, which has happened to me.
Wow, okay.
So, anyway, I did that a month after the marathon, and I just thought, this is the funnest thing I've ever done in my life.
It sounds fun. I'll give you that. It sounds entertaining.
It's fun.
Like, is it maybe almost easier in a way to do that instead of just running mindlessly, because it kind of breaks it up and, like, distracts you a little bit from the just raw running?
That's a good question. Yes and no. The races are all done off-road. You're never on a road. It's always on the trail, and they always put you at, like, most of them are on ski resorts. And they really don't put you on trails. They try to make it as hard as possible. So you're running up and down ski runs. You're running through. I did a race in Virginia once on a mountain, and part of the trail went through a grove of poison ivy.
Oh, great.
So it was awesome.
Wow.
I mean, and there's barbed wire crawls too. So, like, I never did a race where I didn't bleed.
Really?
Yes. And it was always the shower afterwards was the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Because just all those micro tears, especially like from the barbed wire crawl and everything else, it's painful. But, it, you know, it's a good pain.
And sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so.
You're talking to cyclists. We get it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, gosh, I see all the images of people coming home from the mountain bike race. It seems like everybody, at least 50% of them, have had a crash and they're bleeding. Oh,
we know you did this, you know, road rash in the shower.
Yeah.
We know. Yeah.
Exactly.
We dig.
Yeah. Yeah. So very similar, these two sports in that. Like, there's always blood. So, anyway, I did that, started that 10 years ago, loved it, fell in love with the sport. Started to do it more and more, found I was fairly good at it, and I reached a plateau where I just wasn't breaking through placement-wise. And so I tried to find a coach, and I found one. And it was probably, I was fed the worst information, and I stuck with it. He kept saying, trust this process.
Okay.
Okay, I'll trust the process. He didn't know anything. He came from a sprinting background, and that's what he was training me to do. We did a lot of weightlifting. I asked about creatine, which I know has been a topic on this podcast.
Yes, yeah.
And he said, sure, yeah. So I started to take creatine.
Okay.
And it works.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it does stuff. You know, there's a lot of supplements out there where it's like you're just wasting your money on nothing. But creatine does, it does something.
No.
Whether or not it's desirable is up for debate, but it does stuff.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Like, I remember just in a month, what I could deadlift was like, oh my gosh, I've never been able to lift this much weight.
Hmm.
Conversely, when I would run, my legs would swell and my feet would swell so much that I could not keep my shoes loose enough. They would just cut off circulation. Huh. So I wouldn't tie my shoes because my feet would swell so much from running. And it was because of all the water weight that I was retaining with the creatine. And frankly, I just didn't need that muscle, which it builds. And
that's not helping you in the Spartan race, looking like, it might help your Instagram following, but it's not like performance wise, that's not doing anything for you.
Yeah, right? No, exactly.
Okay.
And yeah, my wife commented on my legs one time. I thought, okay,
yeah,
maybe I should keep this up.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know if the comment was good or bad. Probably bad in the end, but
Tone is everything.
Yeah. Exactly. I wasn't very keen on picking up what tone she was using.
Great.
So anyway, yeah, I finally figured out, okay, it's the creatine that's causing my issues.
Okay.
I'm putting way too much weight on, too much water weight. I stopped taking it. And yeah, I lost some of the top end strength, but why would I ever need it?
Yeah.
But more importantly, I mean, I lost all that water and I didn't have any issues in my feet whatsoever. So again, just, I went through a really bad, training philosophy,
coaching experience,
you know.
Was this a Spartan specific coach? He's like, I will train you for the Spartan race.
He thought he was.
Interesting.
He thought he knew, and he was studying on the go. But the other thing was, which I should have just thought about immediately, was, I mean, he would have me do tons of sprints and never told me to just go run for a long time. Never,
really?
Yeah. I mean, never said, yeah, okay, your race is 17 miles. Go, just go, you know, spend a couple hours running on Saturdays or whatever. I mean, never that. No, it was always, okay, do 100-meter sprints. we practiced a lot on form, a lot of sprinting form, and so I learned something there.
He was a sprinter, right?
He was a sprinter, yeah.
Like, if I coached somebody for a marathon, I'd suck because I only know cycling training, and that might even care. Like, if I was trying to pole vault, right? Because this is the equivalent, right? Me being like, you have an athletic background, and you might be good at the thing that you're doing, but I'd be like, I don't know, I know how to make you a good cyclist, so, like, let's go do a bunch of base, you know? And, like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, but, like, for pole vaulting, that's, you know...
It's not going
to
help too much.
Yeah, it might yeah. will hurt you. Because it sounds like this stuck out. You mentioned to me, like,
oh, I got
before we started recording, you mentioned this was, like, one of the big things came up with. Like, I had a bad coaching experience. Yes. Like, this is, like, a big deal in your life, right?
Yes, yes. It was a big deal. I had just qualified for Worlds in Spartan Racing.
Wow.
And so it was like, okay, I've got to up my game. I got to break this plateau. I've got to find a coach. And it just was the worst experience ever. The race at Worlds, it was in Tahoe in September, and it was the worst experience of my life. And I mean, I could go into that more, but I just everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Like, there was at one point in the race where we had to swim in a lake, and the lake was, I think, 39 degrees. And with all that water weight from the creatine that I had on, my body just cramped and seized. And after we got out, it was late September, and there was a massive snowstorm coming in. So once we got out of this freezing cold lake, there was this horrible, just wind chill. Yeah. I swear it was down to 20.
Sure. Yeah.
And anyway, it was just like, I seized up. I was cramping. I wanted to quit. That was the closest I'd ever been to wanting to quit something in my life. But I just kept going, and I still had to get in certain water obstacles, and it was just awful. And like the last, as I finally came down off the mountain towards the finish line, the sun came out, the wind stopped, and I could start feeling my body come back to life. But yeah, that was just a worse experience. And really it was from the poor advice given in coaching that just kind of built up through the months and led to that experience. So I finished that, and I'm like, I parted ways with the coach. And I'm like, you know what? It was a bad experience. I'm sorry. We're not going to do this anymore. So I gave it a couple of years, and then a gym in Salt Lake approached me about signing on with them. They just opened up, and they were specific for Spartan Racing.
Okay.
It had started to become a more popular sport. A lot of more people were doing it. And so I signed on with them. He was my coach, and who, funny enough, was a pro cyclist in Europe.
Okay.
So he wasn't a runner.
Okay.
He was in the military. So that's why he was attracted to the obstacles.
Sure.
But he went to Europe for a couple years and raced professionally. And trained with the coaches over there and everything else. So he was bringing a lot of knowledge about endurance racing and coaching. And lo and behold, and I don't think we've talked about it yet, but it was all about zone two.
Yeah.
So, and which was really hard for me because I just like, you know, again, I wanted to go hard and fast all the time. And I had to step away from Strava.
Yeah.
Because
I took a break from Strava too for about a year.
Yeah.
A few years ago. Yeah. Because for certain personalities, it doesn't like it's, I think it's counterproductive for a certain personality.
Very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to step away because it was like, oh my gosh, I'm running really slow. I can't post this.
Yeah.
And anyway, which is just so ridiculous.
Yeah. When you say it, you're like, that's crazy. But yeah. You're crazy enough that in the moment, that's the most intuitive thing ever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, I started to train with him. I broke through several plateaus, and, you know, it was just such a night and day difference. You know, and I talked about creatine with him, and he said, yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
It works, but you're an endurance guy.
Yeah. Why?
Don't do that.
Yeah. So, you're already married. You're an endurance guy. Like, what? Why are you trying to put on weight? You know, you have zero good reasons to be doing this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and just his philosophy and how we worked. I mean, you know, there was lifting and there was workout capacities and intervals. And anyway, I just learned so much and improved so much, and it made all the difference. And then, you know, had a better experience the next time I qualified for Worlds, and So yeah, it was really cool. So that was up until, you know, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And being part of this, I had to have an active presence on social media because mm-hmm. there was some sponsorship involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of, it got to me. I just couldn't do it all.
Yeah.
And
because in the background, you're a father of four.
Yes.
Owning a business, maybe not quite owning the business
not,
at this point.
Not
but
owning
like,
it at that point.
But
yeah.
I mean, basically, I'd assume being that close to it, kind of doing a lot of, you know, if not owning a business in name, running that enterprise, having a family. Doing this,
yeah,
it's a lot of balls to juggle.
Yeah,
right?
there were. He said when he signed me on, and this has always stuck out to me. He said, "You know, we can do two things really well in our life," and that just always stuck out to me. I think he wanted Spartan Racing to be like one of those.
Yeah,
and honestly, for a while, I wanted it to be too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because it's every, you know, boy's dream is like to be this.
Oh yeah.
Major athlete.
Yeah.
I'm an athlete. And
with its NBA player,
yeah,
football player,
yeah,
F1
exactly.
driver, cyclist.
Yeah.
There's some weird, for a lot of people that like this, it makes this kind of coherent narrative of everything in your life being good, that you're good at something that you're, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah. And yeah, for a lot of while I wanted it to be that. And it boiled over, and I realized I can't, this is just something I do. This is something I enjoy doing. And so I kind of stepped away from it, and yeah, and I did focus, and it's like, no, the two things in my life, well, I know what those, one of them is my profession and the other one is my family.
Right.
That's what I want to focus on. And that, so I stopped the heavy into Spartan Racing. I still had him coach me, but
yeah.
I paid for it, and you know, we still played around because I still love the competition.
Yeah, you're still going to go and still going and doing Spartan races, I assume.
Last year was the first year I didn't do one.
Okay.
So, wow. Yeah, I've full on stopped. And there's Spartan Racing has changed. They're trying to normalize it so they do have it
sure.
an Olympic sport.
Sure.
And it's kind of taken some of the fun excitement away from it.
Yeah.
Because they used to not post the courses. You didn't know what obstacles you were doing.
And now for the sake of mass appeal, things yes. change. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it doesn't have this appeal to me anymore. Anyway, and then, yeah, Andrew, my oldest, started to, you know, get faster. At first we had him run,
mm-hmm.
but we always biked as a family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought, okay, he's enjoying the biking thing, so we'll try it out. And little did I know, this would take over my entire life.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people say that. They're like, oh, we're going to try this.
Yeah.
Because like it's you live in Utah. It's in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, I know how to ride mountain bikes. I ride mountain bikes. I've been riding mountain bikes since I was fill in the blank age, right? No, back then they didn't have suspension. It's like the most cliche thing you hear from everyone, right? But then you do it and you kind of fall into the hole a little bit, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And we fell hard.
Okay.
I mean, it's funny when people ask us now, okay, what do? Well, we mountain bike. That's all we do.
Yeah.
We're at races.
Yeah.
I mean, our trips are centered around mountain biking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, started to work with Andrew and then started to just play with coaching. Like, we were late for the Maybird. Actually, I didn't even know Maybird existed. But we were late his first year for Skyline. So we were, you know, put it on the calendar. And then signed up for Skyline his eighth grade year and saw a lot of Maybird jerseys. Oh, what's this? Oh,
yeah.
It's a cycling club. Cool. So, yeah, then met you guys through Skyline and then joined Maybird and started to coach with you guys. And it's just been, it's been so much fun. And I just love being able to ride with my kid.
Right.
Who is a teenager in high school. How
right.
often do you get a chance to be with your teenager?
Yeah.
I can't think of it. So I have just, we just love it. My wife rides with my daughter, you know, and eventually I'll be riding with my other kids. And naturally, as you guys have all, you know, we're always talking about races and saying, all right, I guess I better give this racing thing a try.
Right.
For mountain biking. Because I did actually do one race. When I was 20.
Really?
I was the Utah state champion.
No way.
Yes. Really? Solitude.
No way.
The trick to that is I was in the beginner category. So
okay, hey, that's the jersey's the same, man.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah.
Anyway, I just it's always just a fun I was silly a state fact. Champion it's once. Like, yeah, I was a state champion. You I'm know. Like, wow. Yeah, well, it was the beginner category. It doesn't really count.
What is context?
Come yeah, on. You I know, mean, it's fluff. It counts for people who are beginners. I wasn't a beginner. I had been biking. But yeah, trying mountain bike racing the last couple years and it's been an eye opener. It's just a different sport, different nuances. It very, very different from a running race, very different from a Spartan race. I'm just amazed at all of you guys who have been racing and to see these young athletes. They are incredible athletes.
Yeah.
And
as anyone coaches will know, you know, like these kids are they're on another level, you know.
They are.
Like, yeah, you get these kids with like world tour level watts per kilo numbers just like kicking around, you know, their mom drops them off and then they go curb stomp you for 2 hours and then they're like, bye, you know.
That's so true. It's absolutely incredible. And it just opened my eyes to wow. Yeah, I mean there's some serious athletes here. Obviously everybody who's on Maybird is wanting more from biking and to improve themselves. And I just love that. And I love the philosophy that Maybird has, and you know, TBY, the best you is just awesome. And it's so fun to see these kids out there at every race, just really giving it their best and seeing the results are really cool too. So
this is interesting because like, I kind of think of the team as being like a thing for kids, right? That is like a youth race team, but it kind of sounds like mountain biking. You're like a parent, right? Like it's not even for you. You're not on Skyline, your kid's on Skyline, but this seems like it's had a pretty profound effect on you too, right?
I forget it's for the kids.
Right.
It seems like it's for me.
It's almost like this weird thing where it's like a high school sport that your parents are taking part in. So like, you don't ever go race, you don't do the Nike races, but you do kind of everything else, right? Like you wear the same uniform and it's weird when people like I remember explaining it to a friend. He's like, that sounds like a nightmare, like hanging out with my dad all the time and like going out, like that sounds awful. And I'm like, it's kind of funny because in a way it sort of sounds like, because I remember being a teenager and kind of resenting my parents a little bit and stuff. But then I realized, because I started doing therapy during COVID, right? And the first thing they go into is like, tell me about your family, because that's where 99% of people's issues are grounded. And he's like, how's your relationship with your dad? I'm like, I'd never thought of it. I'm like, really good, but kind of weird. It's almost more like we're like friends you're like the person I spent the most time with in high school was my dad, which I don't know if that makes me a loser or, you know, but I was like, that's kind of cool. You know, now being a little older and being like the age where my friends are having kids, like I found out that like a really close friend of mine is going to have a kid soon. Being like, whoa, like if I had a kid, that's what I'd want. You know, it's like, not because like, you know, like the artificial closeness that a lot of parents try to like force on their kids and the kid hates it, right?
Yeah.
I'm interested because as a parent, like, did your relationship, and if it's too personal to share, we can cut this out, but like, did your relationship with Andrew change through cycling, spending more time together, or has that always kind of been the dynamic with you guys? Or
it's made it better. We've always been close, I would say, just because I not that I force my hand, but where I love creating memories with my family. So,
yeah.
So we've been out, but I mean, just like through the awkward stage of a young man's life.
Right. Yeah.
We've been able to stay close.
And which is cool.
It is through biking. And I mean, that has really brought us, and I know like moving forward, it's just like, who am I going to go ride with? Well, shoot, I'm going to go ride with my boy.
Right.
And you know, that's the first person I think of, you know, besides riding with Heidi is, well, I'll go ride with my son.
Right.
And I just, you know, I don't know many people that would just go on the weekend and ride with their teenager.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's definitely given us that. And I love, by the way, yours and your relationship with your dad, especially it's very prevalent in the podcast. I'd
imagine it comes through a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
But it's all real, by the way.
Like, I really,
it's not a bit, you know. I really am a jerk to Dan all the time, and I feel badly about it.
But I do find myself laughing out loud. I think every podcast.
Okay.
So anyway, keep it up. It's awesome.
Okay.
I have a Dan story.
Oh, yeah?
I have to share this to you.
Okay.
Does Dan ever soft flex for you? And we can cut this out.
Yes. Oh, 100% yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he had a hard flex one time.
Oh, really?
It was last fall. It was one of our last rides of the NICA season, and we were coming down in the dark. And we left early because it was pitch black. And Dan is still up there with a few other guys.
Yeah.
And so we come down, we're waiting for him, and eventually he comes down. And this is the only time I've ever seen him do this. But, you know, I said, man, Dan, that was, you guys were up there late. And he said, oh, I have excellent night vision. Like, he was so serious about it. Like, I even think he kind of stood tall and puffed his chest out a little bit. Like, I have really good night vision, so there's good to go.
There's this monster inside Dan. He hides to come out so well, right? I don't know if it's his true character or if it's just this like dark side of his ego. But everyone's, and you get the hints of it every once in a while. Like, oh, you know, I'm going to do my Corner Canyon point to point. It's going to be 80 miles and you could come for the first half. You know, it was like a suggestion of his where I'm like, you're not wrong.
Because you can't hang out
with me. Exactly right. And the funny thing is with Dan, he loves to like high road me about not doing the big rides. He's like, oh, we're going to do, you know, he's like, we'll do White Rim twice in a day. You know, like stuff like that. To this, he won't do a cross race. I've been trying for years to get him to do a cross race, but he won't do the short stuff because he knows he's good at the long stuff. So that's all he likes to do.
That's fair.
So I'd like everybody to join me in a concerted effort to bully Dan into doing a cross race because he has a cross bike now. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. He got a cross bike. Someone on the team very generously gave Dan a gravel cross bike that he's got now.
So when's the first race?
September, October, something okay, like that. So well, he's
we
doing
can
it, man.
We work up to it.
Do you ride road bikes at all? Do you have his drop
I
bar?
I have a road bike, but
okay. So drop bar is not a big part of your life yet.
No.
Okay.
Yet. No.
Yet. Oh, it's
natural
coming.
Progression.
It's coming, my friend. Whatever kind of bike you ride, and maybe you've already kind of had this big like, you know, life renaissance thing where you've changed from one thing to another. Like every cyclist goes through this hilarious evolution from whatever they were doing before, realizing that that's lame, and then doing the new thing. And whether it's roadies going to mountain bikes, roadies, and then gravel's this new thing now that everybody's like, oh, well, I used to be a mountain bike racer, but now I'm a gravel racer and I'm cool. And it sometimes involves like, you know, so eventually you will buy a gravel bike and you'll be a gravel bro for like a season. Then you'll be like, oh, wait, mountain biking is more fun. Now I got to go back and like have your whole person. But again, maybe you've already kind of gone through that because you had this big earth-shattering change from one event to cycling. But even then, I think within cycling, we might see you kind of
there might be there. I know
crisis
like,
of faith a little bit. You
yeah,
know?
Miles did a gravel race yesterday, did excellent. But yeah, his first thing is, all right, so when are you getting a gravel bike? When are you going to go?
Yeah, yep.
Like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out this mountain biking thing.
Yeah, dude. How many bikes do you have right now? What is the Preston bike garage situation like?
Oh, let's see. Well, we've got six. We have one. So we only have... Oh, shoot. We have 10. So I guess we have a few.
That's the most cyclist thing I've ever heard. This immediate defense of like, look, there's six. And that's not... Okay, we have 10, but... And then you have to qualify, like, look, it's not as unreasonable as it
there's
sounds.
There's some good qualifiers in there, but yeah.
Yeah. There we go. I'm always trying to open the Overton window with my wife, like, yes, my buddy has 8 bikes. So anyway, me having 4 doesn't sound crazy anymore, right? You know, suggest some really crazy
thing. And how's she doing
thing.
With that?
Well, so we live in a small apartment, and half my bikes, you know, my parents have custody of some of my bikes, I have custody of others, you mm-hmm. know, it's a hairy situation with bikes, but... And then are you still on the Pivot?
No, I sold that. And I have a Specialized.
Epic that's right.
Evo,
okay.
Along with half the team.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I feel bad that I don't remember that because I remember helping you shop for the Pivot. And so that's the one that stuck in my mind. I was like, I feel like you got a new bike.
Okay. Plug for Joe and for anybody who really needs to find a bike. Joe is amazing. Sorry, Joe. I can see his chest puffing right now.
Yeah. Well, you know.
He just really fast. Again, getting into this bike thing 3 years ago, I remember I had this Yeti SB150. It was massive.
Cool bike.
Somebody thought it was a good idea. It's like, mm-hmm. I told him, yeah, I want to do a lot of uphill.
Yep.
Oh, well, this bike's perfect. Like, really?
Yeah.
I thought at the time it was.
It does go uphill.
Yeah, if you say
if you point
so.
It up a hill and spin your legs around, it will go.
I was riding with Red Group. This was the first coaching
you were
experience.
Riding with Red
I
on that bike?
I was riding with the Red Group with Scott Miles, and like it was supposed to be zone two, right?
Sure.
And I was just like, my heart rate was redlining. This is ridiculous on this bike. And I thought, it can't be the bike. It's me.
Because it's a good bike that you probably spent a lot of money on.
Yeah,
right? But like,
sure.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, just quickly realized this is not going to cut it. Because, yeah, that's when I started to talk to you about it. I was like, hey, I think I need a bike. Help me out. And then, like, within an hour, you sent me 6 or 7 bikes off of Pro's Closet and pros and cons. I've just... You educated me so much. I have so much to thank you for.
Oh, it's selfishly.
And continuing on with my children, I mean, Andrew, we talked to you a lot about his bike and what we need to do, and we're still so grateful for the choices that we've made, all thanks to you.
Oh, well, hey, you know.
So, yes.
It's selfishly, I like, and at the time we were doing this, I was working a desk job that I, you know, could maybe have a extend my lunch break a little bit and be,
that was,
you know.
Yeah, I could tell.
Yeah,
had,
I was.
Maybe
I was,
a little extra
time. I was out of the bike industry for the first time in my professional life at that point, and I was like dying to talk about bikes. And it's funny because I do actually remember that. You jogged my memory with that SP150 because you were thankfully thoughtful, because I tell people I like thoughtful bike shoppers. I like a lot of questions. I like you to know what you want and be like, you know, because I hate it when people are like, oh, whatever, I'll buy this and swipe the card, right? Like, that bugs me. So I love that. But they're like, this bike and this bike. The whole time I'm thinking, like, any of these are going to be so much better than what you're on, dude. Gosh. Like, we could, like, you know, I still want to zero in on the right one. But and it's funny, like, my bike buying clinic that I did this year, like, not that many people turned up. And I'm like, it's okay. Everybody has to go through the thing where they spend $10,000 on the wrong bike. And
yes.
But yeah. And I guess it's like, there's like the, is there like an equipment dimension like that in the Spartan race, or is it just, you put on your shoes, you put on whatever shorts are comfortable. Like, it's more just like, it's more about you than this gear, right?
You know, yeah, it's definitely more about the training. But there is a gear component, like the right shoes. So, okay. I mean, you have to have the right running shoe.
Right.
Has to, you know, have a really thick tread, has to shed mud.
But it's not like cycling,
nothing,
man.
Nothing like biking.
Oh my gosh.
And back, you know, when I was biking, this is just a really quick, funny story, but when I was starting to ride with Andrew, I was on a Rocky Mountain Element.
Okay.
26 inch.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's like a classic. Yeah.
Oh, super, it was cool bike. An amazing bike.
Yeah.
But that thing, it was fast.
Like, oh, yeah.
I am just barely, speaking of Strava, breaking my times from 2014 or
really?
2013
no way.
On that Rocky Mountain Element. And every time I'm like, what? Are you
up,
serious?
Uphill or up and down? Because I think if we stuck you on that Rocky
just
going
uphill.
Downhill.
Nothing down.
Versus your epic.
No,
yeah, there'd be...
downhill's always been a very,
That's your white whale, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, I was riding with Andrew and we were over by the UOP and I hear this guy come up behind, and, you know, he came up pretty quick because Andrew was like, he was young.
Yeah.
But, and he's just riding and said, hey, do you want to pass? And he said, no, I'm good. So we kept riding. He's just still there. Hey, are you sure you want to pass? And he said, no, man, I'm actually really enjoying looking at this relic that you're riding on.
Because I feel like that was intended as a compliment. I have
I
to
think
imagine
so.
That was intended
was
as a compliment.
He was a super chill guy. I mean, who knows? But
relic is an interesting word. That's
a relic.
That's the one thing that's throwing me is the use of the word relic.
Well, I thought it was like, okay, I knew there were 29s and I knew there was 275s,
yeah.
Or big, maybe that was just barely
big
coming
bike
out.
Wants you to think you need the 29er.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, I thought, well, come on, this bike isn't that old. But I guess it is. And bless his heart, I put Andrew on that bike his first race season.
Oh.
And he didn't like racing.
Wow.
Until we talked to you and we got an Epic and it just changed everything for him. So yes, the proper bike can make
I'd like to apologize to all
everything.
The kids who had to race Andrew this year on his we should have left him on the other one. So to all you guys, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Your boy is viciously fast. Like riding with him is demoralizing. He's got a bright future ahead of him. I don't want to go to his head. I don't know if he's got an ego yet, but if you don't have an ego yet, I'll build it a little bit. Your boy's quick.
He puts me to shame. He did years ago.
Yeah. That's good for you though.
It was frustrating. Yeah. We were down 2 years ago or three. 2 years ago we were down in St. George, and I'm still faster than him, and I just thought, hey, let's do a little sprint up a hill.
Uh-oh.
And he was on the Rocky Mountain.
Okay.
And he just dropped me like
yep.
anybody's business. And I thought, no, I'm tired, I'm weak. This can't be.
Sure. It's a fluke.
It's a fluke.
He got me.
Yeah.
We'll show him.
And no, that's
like a big, that must be a big moment as a parent when your kid is better than you.
You know,
when this life that you've created has surpassed yeah. your own, and you've been eclipsed and you're obsolete, and that
yeah.
your hopes and dreams live on in this sweaty, hairy little thing that complains and asks for money all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. It was kind of hard. Like, I knew it was coming.
Sure.
And it happened, and I thought, oh, I can still beat him in longer races. And that was true. Like, last year I beat him at the True Grit.
Yeah.
But that has now gone. And
just a long decline no ahead more. For you.
Yep.
You know.
Exactly. Just embrace the horror and ride out in style. Yes. Pretend that I can hang with these guys.
Radio out to pasture, you know. Yeah. Like, oh gosh.
Seriously.
That's funny. No, I remember the first rides where I dropped Dan. That was hugely motivating for me. Yeah, it was, you know, I'm a bad person. And so stuff like that, I just love it. You know?
I just yeah. love the comments. So just one more. I have to say, so we raced the True Grit last week,
mm-hmm.
and everybody did great. And I happened to be in an earlier wave than Joe and Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I think by like an hour, it seems like. I don't know yeah. why they spread it out so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
But so Joe crosses the line. We all run over. We start talking to him and, you know, say, hey, Joe. And he's... You're kind of, you know, still recovering.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, hey, so did you see Dan? And Joe just under his breath said, oh, he's probably still on Zen. Which, for those who don't know the race, that was like 4 hours ago. So
I wasn't feeling magnanimous in that moment. I was really drained.
We just started to bust out laughing, just picturing Dan. Just like 4 hours into the race, only getting to Zen, just kind of lollygagging around. He finished, just like 10 minutes after that.
Yo, it was more than, come on, give me some crows. I beat him. I beat Dan pretty good. He's, you know, I really do need to be nicer. He's a decent guy, and I'm not. And I need to, yeah, that's for another day. Yeah. If you don't mind, I am really interested. This actually went by really fast. I'm curious about interior design. I didn't know what you did for a long time.
Yes.
And I feel like usually when you ask someone, what do you do for work? These days, it's some version of some computer or something, right? Mm-hmm. I do computer something for some company, right? Or I do, you know, or I do sales for business. Interior design, I don't know that I've ever known another interior designer in my life. And I don't know that I could actually elegantly explain what an interior designer does. Like, are you walking around, do you go to houses and be like, that wall should be blue and you should put a chair there? Like
pretty much that's all we do.
So what? Yeah. What do you do?
Like I'm just looking at this house, thinking that you got to do a different paint color on your bathroom wall.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's
no, interior design is we work with architects and builders.
Okay.
From the start, we work on new construction.
Okay.
So the projects we're working on right now, half are new construction.
Oh, wow.
And okay. we begin immediately with the architects. So we're in the meetings with the architects, going over the layouts of the home. And because with the homes these days, there's so much design involved, every room. Well, and it also depends on the clientele. So
sure.
keep in mind, I'm working with people in Park City. I mean, these homes range from 8 to 30,000 square feet. So... And you know, they want it to be nice. So we work just every room has a very specific design. And, you know, we need to work with the architect on that, make sure there's enough space in this room for this or the theater. Okay, how much depth do we need for the walls and everything else? So we work a lot with that. And like in the remodel project, I also do some architectural layouts. I'm not a licensed architect, but I draw layouts. For remodels and whatnot.
Really?
Yes. Which I love. I love space planning.
Like in another life, you could have been an architect.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Okay. So I get to do that, which fulfills that need. But then as we work through the house, I mean, we'd work with cabinets and paint colors and wall coverings and tile designs, you know, what type of flooring, what's the baseboard and casing profile, appliances, plumbing fixtures, and then we finish the home with the soft goods, your furniture. So we select all the furniture, fabrics, pillows, draperies, window treatments, all of that stuff. So everything, every thought that needs to go into home, that's what we cover.
Okay. I have a question. Is what you do art? Are you an artist?
That is a great question, and I've thought a lot about that.
Really?
I think that, yes, there is partial artistry. We do a lot of creation.
Mm-hmm.
So we create spaces, we create rooms, we create color palettes. I enjoy custom designing chandeliers. And furniture, you know, we see a lot from catalogs, and sometimes things in catalogs or what other companies do just aren't quite it, or they want something very unique and one-off for their home. So we get to design that. So yes, we do get to play the role of an artist. I also feel that, you know, we do a lot of math. I mean, it seems like all I'm doing is math and calculations and
the kind of architect side you mentioned.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so there's a lot of that. So I think it's a nice blend. But also the other component is it is a business. So yeah. Need to run it and make sure it runs smooth and customer service and everything else. So there's just a lot of components involved, and I think all of it married together is what I just love. I mean, I really do enjoy my profession. I love what I do.
Because when I asked you to describe, that was the first thing that you said, is like that. So you do kind of define yourself to some extent by this professional thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm curious too, from the business perspective, are you paid? Because right now, I work at a bike shop right now, right? I'm working at Contender. I don't know if I told you.
Is Andrew working there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not anymore. I've had some crazy life. My career's been all over the place. Discuss that offline. I spent 5 years working for Backcountry. In Backcountry, I was paid for what I knew. I was paid for my expertise, right?
Yeah.
And my ability to convey that to people. Are you paid for expertise or for your taste? Because that's the other thing I'm wondering is, like, are you paid because people know that you know how to make things look really good and there's this just intangible sort of like taste or sense for style? Or is it more for this? Is that the same thing? Is your expertise the fact that you have good taste? Like, because I'm just trying to wrap my head around what is it that people are paying for when they pay you to design the interior of their home?
That's a really great question as well. There are a lot of designers that have a style.
Yeah.
And many people hire a designer based on their style, what their projects have looked like. We have a very wide range of styles.
Okay.
So, but I would say it's payment for your knowledge and expertise of design, of the industry, of what's trending.
Mm-hmm.
And then just knowledge of construction and building. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces in the construction part.
Yeah.
And I mean, just even down to, okay, your door is 36 inches wide. If we order a sofa that's 52 inches deep and, I don't know, 112 inches tall, it's not going to fit through your door.
Okay.
So we can't get it in. So just like little things like that. But I would definitely say it's more for your expertise in the industry.
Okay. So like, is your job to take what people want and facilitate it, or is your job to tell people what they want?
It's to take what they want.
Okay.
So oftentimes they have a dream home.
Right.
And we realize those dreams.
Okay.
And so we know, okay, like oftentimes they'll show us an image or a Pinterest page.
Got it.
And we say, okay, this is their style. Great. Okay. Now we know what we're looking for. And so we start going into various points and, you know, tile. Okay. We know what kind of designs we want. So that helps us. And then we present them with two or three options, which they get to choose. And so it's very much their home. I can think of maybe one or two times where it's been like, just design it for me.
Sure, yeah.
And that's great, yeah. And that's really fun, and we get to express kind of some artistic freedom, and it's worked out very well. But it's also kind of a little unnerving because it's like, okay,
Because you don't know that they're... Because I hate it when people are like... Like in the bike world, where they don't know what they want. And that's why I mentioned really, I'd rather you know what you want. And then maybe I help you tweak some things that you are getting wrong, right? But then, because it's like people want stuff. They want something, whether they know it or not, they want something, right? So I've run into this too, where I know you want something. And if you can't tell me what it is, the likelihood of you getting something that you actually like and not being angry at me at the end of the process is like a lot better.
Exactly.
So is that, and I'm actually curious, like what is I'm gonna ask you, what is the best and worst day for you? Like, what's a really good day as an interior designer? Like, what happens on a really good day that makes you feel awesome about your job?
I love interacting with people.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when I've spent time, for instance, I have meetings this week where I get to present fabrics and furniture.
Okay,
I'm really excited about that. Because I've spent time, I know what they want. I've spent hours picking fabrics and putting some collages together and palettes together. And we've already discussed, kind of the furniture layout. We've designed the home, so we know what it's all going into. And I love meeting with them and talking about it and like coming to the end and they're happy. And I love that. And then also I love just like when we get to move the furniture in and just present the house as a whole. That's just so fun to have the clients walk in and just they're so excited because it's what they have been planning, what they've foreseen. Right. And I love those days. So
what's a really bad day look like? What's a day where you're like, oh my gosh, why do I do this? This sucks.
When I feel unproductive.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, like there's kind of, sometimes it's hot and cold between projects.
Sure.
And so sometimes there are days where I'm waiting on people to get me answers or anything. And so I'm just there.
Yeah. Not much you can do.
Yeah. Those are kind of frustrating days. Or it's also frustrating. I don't know. These are just silly little things. But like, if somebody just falls in love with a fabric and then I find out it's discontinued and I can't get it anymore.
Right.
That's, I mean, people are always so... Like, okay, well, we'll find something new and something better, but it's frustrating because, hey, we spent time finding this and they love it and now we have to do it all over again.
Right.
But so those are kind of frustrating.
Would you say that you love what you do or that it, because for me, like I'd love to find something that I love, but I think I'd be okay with something that I'm like, I don't love this, but it's fine and I'm good at it and I can focus on cycling. Or is this, because you mentioned earlier, you only do two things and you picked this over Spartan racing. And there's probably a practical dimension to that where you probably make more money doing this than Spartan racing. Yeah. But like, do you love what you do?
I do. I love it. I love going to work and I get excited about new projects because it's just new. It's something new that you get to think about. It's not the same thing day in and day out. It's a new project. It's a new thought and you get to express creativity. And I do love what I do and I love getting up and going to work. And because I do love what I do, I'm more efficient at it, which helps me, have a little more time to be with Maybird, to be biking and whatnot. Because it's not just like, oh, I'm waking up and I dread what I'm going to do and I just drag my feet through it. And no, I'm excited to do it, do what I need to do and move on. So
I and maybe this is kind of a cynical way to look at it. I would assume that you're in a minority feeling that way about what you do for work. Or at least stereotypically, it seems, a lot of people are like, I hate Sunday night because I got to go to work on Monday.
Yeah, right? It seems that way.
Hmm.
I know there are some people that do enjoy their occupation. But I to be fair, when I first started working, I didn't really understand all the little minutiae. And so, on occasion, it would be hard to show up. But... as I understood the industry and as I, just understood everything about it, I just kind of fell more and more in love with it. I just love it. But I'm not sure. Hopefully there are many people out there that enjoy what they do. I do enjoy it.
Cause that's what I'm trying to figure out in my career right now is figure out something that I would love to do, something that I love, but at least do something that I don't absolutely hate. Because I know a lot of people who just hate what they do. And even if you have things outside of work that you love, like spending 8 hours a day doing something that you despise is rough.
It's rough, yeah.
And so maybe if you know, I don't want to blow up your whole Sunday here. The majority of people who listen to this podcast, I think, are kids. And they're kids who are at kind of a juncture where they're starting college soon, or maybe they're in college, and they're starting to have to kind of take concrete steps towards some kind of professional things, unless they have a trust fund. And if you have a trust fund, you can like ignore this part. But yeah. For those of you who are going to have to work, which I think is probably all of you, like what would your advice be, or what advice do you give to your kids when it comes to like finding something that you can do professionally that you love or at least are at peace with?
I would say know who you are. If you are someone that cannot sit down in an office, don't pursue a profession that requires you to sit in the office. And then also know what you are comfortable with. Like, are you comfortable living at a certain wage, or mm-hmm. do you need to have a ton? If you need to have a ton, well, then obviously that limits the amount, the professions that you should pursue. But if you're comfortable with, you know, just living with, say, maybe what you grew up in, then that does, you know, that will focus you on what you need to be looking at. But just, I think just knowing who you are above and beyond is what's most important. Don't fight against it. Like for me, I needed freedom. I needed freedom so that I can go biking, or I can take a long lunch break and go on a run, or I don't have to show up at work at 9 o'clock. And so, well, that means I should probably look at a business ownership type material where I can make my own hours. And so that's, you know, so this is just perfect for me because I do have the freedom. I can work when I need to and when I want to. Now, if I need to extend a little bit longer, that's fine because I know tomorrow morning I get to go on a ride or whatever. So I think that's pretty important, is to just know what you like and what you need. So kind of define what you need and then select an occupation based on that.
Maybe it's a kind of different version of that same question. And, you know, the attrition rate is really rough for kids coming out of high school, coming out of NICA and moving on. You seem to be somebody who's been able to pretty successfully integrate athletic pursuits into your life. And I promise this will actually be my last question. How do you do it? How have you done it? What would you avoid doing? How do we, cause it would be hard for you to lose athleticism in your life, right? How do you do it?
I have always enjoyed athletic pursuits. That is true. Moderation is key.
Okay.
Always be moderate in your approach to everything. I've seen a lot of people go all in on like trying to pursue an athletic profession. And I don't know what the statistics are.
They're not great. If you were Dan, I'd make fun of you right now.
And you should.
You get a pass. That's the first mistake.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. Next time though, hit me up.
Okay.
So, but they're not great.
Yeah.
And very hard. And if, you know, like pursuing an athletic career, if that's really what you do, then yeah, go all in. But for most of us, I'd say just be moderate in your pursuit. Like enjoy biking. Enjoy if you're at a high level right now in Maybird or in Nike or whatever. Enjoy it and have fun and pursue it and work hard at your goals. But just don't let it consume you. Don't let it be you. Don't have the end goal to win. Be okay with not winning and be moderate in all that you do. And if you are moderate, then you'll be able to, I think, carry this on in years to come. And that's something that's helped me, is to just take everything in moderation. Don't go crazy on it all. So I've always enjoyed running, and yes, I've enjoyed Spartan racing, and I'll probably do a race this year just for fun because I enjoyed it, but I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket. And so I really do feel that moderation is very important as you approach anything athletic or anything really. So,
right. Well, I appreciate you taking taking a, you know, it's probably ended up being a couple hours out of your Sunday here. Appreciate everything that you and your family do for the team. I appreciate your kid as long as I'm not riding with him, because that's rough. And yeah, this has been good for me to chew on. I'm thinking about this a lot more. Try to approach. I think you're right with moderation there. You know that like there's a period in my life where like challenge was like I want to be top 10 at nationals. It didn't happen, by the way. And I think there's a period in my life where like a challenge is me doing an iCup again because it's been a year since I've raced, right? So yeah, I think to all you young guys, like, you know, can't promise that the next 5 to 10 years of your life are going to be chill and easy. They might kind of suck, but try to be like Brady Preston. Good stuff, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week.